You Forever by Tuesday Love, sang Grandpa. Read to you by Blue Friend, September 2016. Lesson 22. Before we go on to our lesson proper, we should like to draw your attention to an item of very great interest which has just been drawn to our attention. It's of particular interest because throughout this course we've been talking so much about electric currents of the body and saying how currents travel along the nerves to activate the muscles. Now, in Electronics Illustrated magazine for January 1963, page 62, there is this fascinating article with the title of Russia's Amazing Electronic Hand. Professor Aaron E. Kobrinsky is a doctor of engineering in the USSR Academy of Sciences, and it seems that he, with his assistants, have been doing research into the matter of prosthetics, artificial limbs. Up to the present, the effort involved in making an artificial arm move at all has been a very tiring process for the wearer. Now, however, in Russia, there have been developed an artificial arm which is electrically operated. At the time of the amputation, two special electrodes are put on the end of certain nerves, the nerves which normally would move the muscles of the arm. And when the stump has healed, so that an artificial arm may be fitted, the currents coming from the brain down the nerves, and which would normally move, say, fingers and thumbs, are passed on to the artificial arm, where the very minute body currents are amplified greatly, so that the relays may be operated and the fingers and thumb of the prosthetic appliance can work as did the natural finger and thumb. It is stated that with these artificial arms it is possible to write a letter. An illustration in Electronics Illustrated shows a person with an artificial arm holding a pencil between fingers and thumb and actually writing. You may have been a little tired of our discourse about electric currents, brainwaves, etc., and that is why we mentioned this particular incident, which really is most illuminating. We can visualize a future when all artificial appliances will be controlled by the biochemical currents. Now, having dealt with that, we want to talk about emotions, because as we think, so we are. If we think too much of sadness, then we start a process which results in certain of our body cells becoming corroded. Too much sadness, too much misery, can bring on liver complaints or gallbladder complaints. Consider this. A man and woman married for a long time are very, very attached to each other. The man suddenly dies, and the woman, who's now a widow, is overcome with the desolation of her loss. She becomes prostrate with sadness. She becomes pale and may even waste away. Often there will actually be some severe physical illness. Worse, there may even be a mental breakdown. The cause of this is that under the violent stimulus of such a loss, the brain generates a high current of electricity which floods through the body, penetrating all organs and all glands and creating considerable back pressure. This inhibits the normal activities of the body. The sufferer may become numb, hardly able to think, hardly able to move. Frequently, the excess stimulus at lacrimal glands will cause floods of tears because these glands act as a safety valve. We get a similar sort of thing with the wrong voltage when we put, let us say, a 3.5 bulb in a 6-volt torch. Activity is very bright for a few moments, but then the bulb blows out. The human body can blow out too, but that will result in trance or coma, or even insanity. Undoubtedly, all of us have seen an animal which is very frightened. Possibly, the animal has been chased by some larger, fierce animal. The fugitive will not eat while it is frightened, and, if one should be able to force the animal to eat the food, would not digest. All the gastric secretions, which normally break down the food, cease when an animal is frightened. Actually, the secretions dry up, so any intake of food is completely and utterly against the nature of the animal. Very highly excited persons, or a person who's very depressed, should neither be persuaded nor forced to eat, for although, no doubt, such persuasion would be kindly meant, it would not be in the interest of the sufferer. Sorrow or any deep emotion brings a complete change in the chemical processes of the body. Uncertainty or sorrow can completely color a person's outlook, make a person unbearable, make a person impossible to get on with. When we say color a person's outlook, we mean just that, for one's chemical secretions really do alter the colors or the general trend of colors which one sees. We all know that those who are in love see the world through rose-tinted spectacles, while those who are depressed and weary see the world through a definitely grayish tinge. If we are to make progress, we must cultivate equanimity of temperament. We must attain such a balance of emotion that we are neither wildly excited nor unduly depressed. We must make sure that those brain waves which we talked about have no high peaks and no deep valleys. The human body is designed to function in a certain manner. All the fits and starts to which it is subjected in so-called civilization does definite harm. Proof of this can be seen in the number of businessmen who have gastric ulcers or heart attacks or who become jumpy. Again, this is the result of high fluctuations of electricity creating that back pressure which we mentioned previously. The back pressure suffuses various organs and definitely interferes with their normal functioning. For instance, a person with ulcers, he does not take in food, and so the gastric acids become stronger and stronger until, in the end, they literally burn a hole through him. It follows then that those who want to progress and do telepathy, clairvoyance, or psychometry, and all the rest of it, must be sure indeed that they cultivate evenness of temperament. It can be cultivated. Frequently a person will become moody, depressed, and uncertain. The person will be difficult indeed to live with. any incident which another person would not notice, or noticing would laugh off, would irritate this nervous and moody person quite unbearably, and might even bring on an attack of hysteria or simulated suicide. Such things do happen. Do you know what hysteria is? It is a thing which actively is connected with the sex development of a person. Hysteria is connected with one of the most important female organs and functions, and often a person will have hysterectomy, which sometimes affects them very badly by changing the whole functioning of the body. Many years ago, people had the belief that only women could have hysteria, but nowadays they're starting to know better, because every man is a bit of a woman, and every woman is a bit of a man, and the two are remarkably similar. It is now known that each sex has all the organs of the other in some degree or other. Hysteria, then, is now a man's complaint as well as that of a woman. Hysteria is a great inhibitor of things to do with the occult. If a person gives way to moods and has wide fluctuations of electrical output from the brain, then the person will assuredly stop himself or herself from astral traveling, from telepathy, from clairvoyance, and from other metaphysical phenomena. We must be of even temperament. We have to be balanced before we can deal with the occult sciences. Remarkably enough, many people look upon clairvoyance or telepaths as being neurotic or imaginative or something of that nature. They look upon the telepath and the clairvoyant as being unbalanced. Nothing could be further from the truth. Only the fake clairvoyant, only the fraudulent telepath can be neurotic or unbalanced, because as they are fakes and fraudulent anyhow, their state of mental health has no bearing on the subject. We say most definitely that one can only be telepathic, can only be clairvoyant, when the mind is functioning normally and the brain waves are fairly even and unruffled. The waves from the brain must be smooth, that is, there must be no sudden peaks or depressions which will upset reception. We, who are telepathic, have to receive messages, therefore, we have to be quiescent, we have to be receptive, which means that we have to keep our minds open. If our minds are in a furor all the time, if we're so busy thinking of our own miseries that we are not perceptive to the thoughts of others, then we shall not receive telepathically or clairvoyantly. Again, the neurotic person cannot be clairvoyant genuinely. The psychopath is not a telepath. Keep your mind free from upsets. When you feel irritated, or when you feel that the cares of the world are heaped upon your shoulders, take a deep breath, then take another and yet another. Think, will all these matters worry you in 100 years' time, or will they worry anyone else in 100 years' time? Or if they're going to worry you in 100 years' time, why should you worry about them now? This business of keeping calm is of utter importance for our health, both physical and mental. So we suggest that when you start to become irritable, you come to a halt and ask yourself why you're feeling bad-tempered. Why are you so gloomy, so miserable? Why are you upsetting the lives of other people around you? Remember, too, that in being gloomy, bad-tempered, or irritable, miserable, and all the gamut of bad emotions, you are hurting yourself only. You're not hurting the other person. He might be a bit tired of tantrums, but you are poisoning yourself as surely as if you took arsenic or rat poison or cyanide of potassium. Some of the people around you probably have far greater problems than you, yet they're not showing the effect of the strain. If you are showing the effects of strain, it means that you do not have the correct perspective. It means that possibly, not inevitably, you may not be of the same mental and spiritual status as the other person. We are upon earth to learn, and no normal human is ever given too much to learn at one time. We may feel that we are being persecuted or victimized. We may feel that we are the subject of an unkind, malignant fate. Yet, if we really reflect upon the matter, we can see that we are not overstressed. We only think that we are. Let us get back to the children again. A child may be given homework. He may think that there is a shocking amount of homework, especially as he wants to go out playing games or fishing or chasing after a member of the opposite sex. He's so busy thinking of playing games and fishing that he does not even devote the normal one-tenth of his mind to his work. And so it appears to be hard. Because he is making no real effort to get through his work, he finds that it takes far longer than it would to any thinking person. He gets tired of the work. He does not devote a twentieth of his consciousness to the work, and he becomes more and more frustrated. Eventually, he complains to his parents that he has too much homework, that all the strain is making him ill. The parents complain to the teacher that the child has too much work to do. No one thinks of knocking some sense into the child, who, after all, is the one who should be trained. As with the child, so with you. You want to make progress? Then you have to abide by certain rules. You have to keep calm. You have to take the middle way. So, the middle way is a very simple means of telling you that you must not work so hard that you cannot see the forest for the trees. You must not laze so much that nothing at all is done. Go somewhere between the two extremes, and you will find that your progress is remarkable. Too many people really slave at a thing in the hopes of getting it done. They try so hard that all their energy, all their brain power is devoted to trying, and nothing is left for attaining. If you try too hard, it is like a car racing along in low gear, all fuss and splather, and making hardly any progress. The power of the mind. It is unfortunately possible for anyone to have anything that one wants. There are certain laws of nature, or if you prefer, of the occult, which makes it possible for anyone to have success or money if they will follow simple rules. We have tried to show throughout this course that occultism, which really means that which is unknown, follows absolutely sensible laws and rules, and there is nothing mystical about such things. For that purpose, we're going to tell you how to get what you want. Let us say, though, that when we say, get what you want, we emphasize and re-emphasize that one should strive for the spiritual values. One should, at all times, work with determination to increase one's worth in the next life. A million or two would be very useful. Let us hasten to agree on that. But it would be a snare and a delusion if we had a million or two at the expense of the next life. Our stay on earth is temporary, and again, we state that every effort of ours upon this earth should be devoted to learning and to improving ourselves so that we are worth more when we move into the next life. Let us then strive for spirituality. Let us strive that we may show kindness to others, and that true humility, which must not be confused with false modesty, but the humility which assists us in our climb upwards. Everything is in a state of movement. All life is movement. Even death is movement, because cells are breaking down and turning into other compounds. Let us remember at all times that one cannot stand still on a tightrope. One can either go forwards or backwards. Our endeavors should be to go forward. That is, we should move forward into spirituality, into kindness, into understanding for others, not backwards when we should be among the money grabbers, those who cling to temporal possessions, rather than striving to attain richness of the spirit. But let us show you how you may gain all you desire. The mind can give us all that we ask, if we will let it. There are immense powers latent within the subconscious. Unfortunately, most people are not taught how to contact the subconscious. We function at 1/10 consciousness and, at most, 1/10 of our abilities. By aligning the subconscious on our side, we can achieve miracles, as did the prophets of old. It is useless to pray idly and without being specific. It is useless to pray with an empty mind, because one's words will echo hollowly if one does so. Use your brain. Use your mind. Use the great possibilities of the subconscious. There are certain inviolable steps which must always be followed. First, decide precisely what you want. Be absolutely definite. You must know what you want. You must say what you want, and you must visualize it. What exactly do you want? It will not do to say you want a lot of money. It will not do to say that you want a new car, or a new wife, or a new husband. You must state exactly what it is that you want. You must visualize it, picture it in your mind, and hold that picture firmly before you. If you want money, state quite definitely how much you want. It must be a definite sum. About half a million will not do it. It must be definite. If you are wise, however, you will not bother so much about money, about the mundane things. You will want to be like Gandhi, Buddha, Christ, St. Peter, St. anybody. You will strive to gain virtues which will be of use when you leave this life. When you have decided what you want, you come to stage two. We have already told you that you must give in order that you may receive. What are you going to give? If you are asking for a certain sum of money, and that sum must be exactly specified, are you willing to give a tithe, which of course is a tenth of that money? Are you willing to give help to other people who are not so fortunately placed as you? It is futile to say, yes, when I get the money, I'll give a tenth of it. You must start helping before that. You must start assisting those in need. If you do that, you will be living the spirit of give that you may receive. Again, you must be definite. You must be absolutely precise. The third item is, when do you want this money or this car or new husband or new wife? It is not enough to say you want it sometime in the indefinite future. And of course it is absurd to say that you want it immediately, because there are physical laws which cannot be broken. It is not possible for a god to drop a gold brick into your waiting hands. And in any case, if the brick did fall, it would probably crush a few toes. Your time limit must be physically feasible. You could, for instance, say that you will have the money by such and such a month in such and such a year, but you could not say that you would have a fortune within the next 5 minutes, because that would be contrary to the laws of nature, and it would nullify your thought power. What are you going to do to realize your ambition? Supposing, just by way of illustration, that you want a new car. Well, first of all, can you drive? It would be of little point to desire a new car unless you knew how to drive. So if you are determined to have a new car, take driving lessons first. Then you can decide on the type of car you want and all that sort of thing. If you're looking for a husband or a wife, make sure that you, in your turn, are fitted to be an adequate partner. Make sure that you understand the law of give and take and are prepared to do your share to make a success of marriage, because marriage is not just a case of take all and give nothing. When you take a partner, you also have to give a partner to the other person. When you get married, you cease to be the one person, and you take on the problems and the worries and the pleasures of two persons. Before you can hope to be satisfactorily and happily married, you have to be sure that you are able physically, mentally, and spiritually to be a satisfactory partner yourself. As our fifth item, we're going to say that the written word is stronger than the spoken word. While the two together make an unbeatable combination, write out what you want. Write it out as simply and as clearly as you can. You know what you want, so write it down. Do you want to be spiritual? Who is your ideal in the world of spirituality? Enumerate that person's abilities, talents, and strong points of character. Write it all down. If you're trying to get money, write down the precise sum you want. Write down when you want it. And make clear in writing that you are going to help other people. Make clear that you are going to tithe. When you have written all this down as simply and as clearly as you can, write at the end, "I will give that I may receive." You must also add a note stating how you are going to work for the desired result. For, bear in mind once again, that you cannot get anything from nothing. Everything has to be paid for in some form. There is no such thing as getting something for free. If you receive $100 unexpectedly, you have to give $100 worth of service. If you expect other people to help you, then you must first help them. Assuming that you have written all this down, read your statement aloud to yourself 3 times a day. There is power gained if you can read it aloud in the quietude and privacy of your own room. Read it in the morning before you leave your bedroom. Read it again at lunchtime, and read it once again before going to sleep at night, so that 3 times a day, at least, you have read your affirmation, which has thus become akin to a mantra. As you read this, feel that the money or car or whatever it is that you want is coming to you. Be positive about it. Imagine that you have the thing desired. Imagine that it is actually within your grasp. The stronger you can think about this, that you can imagine all this, the more positive will the reaction be. It is a waste of effort to think, "Well, I only hope it works. I only hope I shall get it, but I have my doubts." That will invalidate your mantra immediately. You must be quite positive and absolutely constructive all the time, and you must not permit any doubts to enter. If you will adopt these steps, you will drive the thought into your subconscious, and the subconscious is 9 times cleverer than you are. If you can interest your subconscious, then you will get help, more help than you believed possible. It is a fact, proved time after time, that when one makes money, other money comes more easily. A millionaire, for instance, would tell you that after he made 1 million, 2, 3, or 4 millions comes very much more easily and with little additional work. The more money one has, the more money is attracted to one. It works on the law akin to that of magnetism. Again, let us caution you that there are things of greater value than money. Once again, let us say that no one has ever taken a single coin into the next world, and the more money you have, the more you leave for other people. The more you strive for money, the more you contaminate yourself and make it difficult for yourself to aspire and to attain to the spiritual values. The more good you do for others, the more good you take away with you. Life on earth is hard, and one of the hardest of all is the falsification of values. At the present time, people think that money is all that matters. So long as we have enough that we may eat, clothe ourselves, and be sheltered, that will suffice. But we can never have too much spirituality. We can never have too much purity of thought. We can never help others too much, for in helping others, we help ourselves. We suggest that you read and reread this lesson. Perhaps it is the most important lesson yet. If you follow the instructions, you will find that you can have almost anything you want. What do you want? The choice must be yours, for you can have whatever it is that you desire. A pointer. Money, success on this earth, and then eclipse and start all over again? Or will you choose spirituality, purity, and service to others? It may mean poverty or near poverty on the earth, which, after all, is only a speck of dust floating in the void. But after this short, short life, there comes the greater world, where purity and spirituality is the coin of the realm, and where money, the currency of earth, has no value. The choice is yours. End of lesson 22.